I'm Rex Salisbury, and this is the Cambrian FinTech Podcast. On this show, we talk to the founders, operators, and investors who are shaping the future of financial services. We've got a lot to talk about. Big story, the Visa lawsuit. Tell us what's going on with that.
Yeah, so the Department of Justice is coming after Visa. They say that with a 60% market share, they use bulk discounts and incentives to ensure merchants route debit payments via its network in the United States. And they also say they offer incentives for potential competitors to collaborate with them and sweeten the deal so that they're taking collaborators off the board. And like,
yeah, and a key point here is the debit component, right? I think that's something we should call out. It's not across the whole network. Visa's faced a lot of it.
They're not talking about credit cards. They're talking about debit. So, you know, this isn't your Chase Sapphire. This isn't credit cards. This is just your debit card. And Visa has a dominant market share. And what they're saying is Visa has pricing power because they have 60% market share, and they use that pricing power to offer incentives to everybody involved to route via their network, right? Which is their argument for a monopoly.
Yeah, and there are two things there too about the monopoly thing. One is to have monopoly, you have to define a market. And then the test the courts have usually held out is over 50%, maybe over 70%, definitely 60%. It's in the middle, probably, but you have to define the market, debit versus credit versus other things. But it's like a pretty good, you know, the makings of a reasonable case against Visa in this regard. But unpack what the kind of implications are, both for Visa, but also for the fintech ecosystem.
The first thing that happened is Visa stock dipped like 5% because there's a concern there's going to be some remedy and something along those lines. And then anything that impacts the swipe fees, the interchange fees, impacts everybody. That's unit economics for the massive merchants, especially if you're Amazon or Walmart. You're operating on these tiny razor thin margins. Anything you can do to move that number is absolutely just huge. On the fintech side, I mean, a lot of it sort of sits outside of this because a lot of fintech was built on the smaller banks who are Durbin exempt. So there was always more interchange to go around. There was much more pie to kind of play with. And remember, yeah, so we're talking about
big merchants, Amazon, Walmart, clearly they have something to win, which is, you know, paying lower fees. But yeah, unpack the stuff around fintech is, you know, the Chimes, the Cash Apps. They're built on top of Durbin-exempt banks that have fewer than $10 billion in assets. Is this going to impact? And look, this is also the beginning of the case. These things take years to play out. But like, what is it? Drill down to that level. What's the potential implication?
Well, probably nothing. Because those Durbin-exempt banks, right, the network fee, remember, is about 3 cents, and regulated debit is around 25, 26 cents, something along those lines, if my memory serves me. So 3 cents out of 26, you know, that's meaningful. If I could move that down a little bit, that, you know, at scale, that's going to make a massive difference. But if the swipe fee is closer to $1, $1.25, $1.50 on a Durbin-exempt bank, which, you know, the Cash Apps and others potentially benefit a lot more from, then it probably doesn't impact their revenues in quite the same way. But then also, we should point over there and say, well, there's a whole other thing going on with bank fintech partnerships and what's going to happen with that space. So they've got their own headaches to worry about, not just this, but this could really, really change the game. But you made a really good point, right? This is the beginning of a conversation, and we're going into an election year. Like, will the DOJ still be chasing this the other side of an election? Is this going to be kind of a big deal? What do you think? Do you think this one is like a open and shut case? Is it borderline? What's your read?
So I think it's actually kind of a nothing burger in the sense that they've been, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. They've been subject to antitrust before. There was a separate antitrust concern that took about 10 years to litigate, came through recently, was going to move things around a little bit. And then I think it even got rolled back. So like, these things just take a really long time. But I think it is a good opening to talk about what does really matter in payments. And this is something you and I were talking about before, which is there are all these other new real-time payment rails. Also, you know, the frustrating thing is like, does Visa have potentially, you know, monopoly market power in the debit network. Yes, but it's one of the frustrating things is we just haven't built real-time payment networks generally. Like the Fed's been very slow to build things, but it is coming online now. So I think this will take a while to litigate, come out. Like it will around the margins impact some people, but the bigger story is maybe around what's going on with the other real-time payment rails and the extent to which we can get adoption as people like Plaid and Stripe and others push pay by bank. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on.
Well, you remember the famous volcano in the DOJ case, right? Like, so for those of you that didn't see it, like, here it is. Like, here's the image. This was the Department of Justice took a shot of apparently a Visa internal document that said, you know, ultimately Plaid is in a position to own identity and really reroute all accounts away from cards towards using debit rails, which are much cheaper, which would, you know, be dangerous to Visa. So we should buy them so that we can control this and manage it. And that was, you know, that was kind of a red rag to a bull at the DOJ. That definitely did look like they were using market power. They were acquiring something to kind of move it away. So that's a bit of a different case. But now wind the clock forward and we see that pay by bank is slowly becoming a thing. FedNow has finally launched. Real-time payments and same-day ACH are becoming much more adopted. And this is the year that, like, you know, Stripe Link, that appears at checkout to pay by bank is offering discounts to use pay by bank on things like Airbnb and Uber drivers. So if I'm sitting at checkout and I see like a 10% off if I just use my bank payment instead of my card, I'm going to take that all day. I'm anyone's for a discount. What can I say? I'm a cheap date. But that... But that model, so I think that's really coming. So Visa's got the domestic threat. And then you think about it on the global scale, right? Like UPI and PIX and many of the markets, like where's Visa's growth going to come from? It's already saturated the US, especially on debit. So Visa is not Visa outside the US. In Europe, it is not the dominant player. You know, it and MasterCard are much closer, if not MasterCard is even slightly ahead. And in Europe, every market has a domestic debit network that is dominant. I mean, Ideal in the Netherlands, Swish in the Scandinavian region, and Vips, and all of these things. That's really normal. So Visa just happens to be the one for the US that is dominant, but also it happens to have done well globally. But do you want that to be Alipay? Do you want that to be Pix? Do you want that to be UPI? Or do you want to think differently about it? So I think Visa's got those two competitive issues. Like, where are they globally? Yeah. Where are they versus other rails? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. And I think that's the bigger story is around how are we going to pay going forward? And to your points, like UPI, Pix in other countries have really taken off. In the US, we're a little more ossified. I think in the US where it probably matters is less about like, oh, what happens at the nitty gritty, like interchange level for debit networks and more about Visa is going to be frozen out of trying to solidify its market positions through acquisitions that could empower that stance. And so I think it's less about where like the actual outcomes of this case on like the specifics of interchange and more about the chilling effect for acquisitions. Which this gets back to the Plaid thing and the Plaid volcano. They tried to acquire Plaid, and then that was stopped
Let's see what happens with Tink, right? Because they managed to acquire the open finance platform in Europe, Tink, which, you know, in a lot of the sort of Western Europe markets and Northern European markets, Tink is very, very strong. Those are more cash-heavy markets. But Tink is nowhere in the US. MasterCard, meanwhile, is over here, like, acquiring Finicity and doing its thing. And
our DOJ has no purview in Europe, of course, right? Like, it's up to the EU. Their commissioners.
Yeah, well, and the EU does not like antitrust at all. But weirdly, since the Draghi report, EU's really changing its tack. So perhaps there's like a change of tune in some of the regulators and there's a change of tune in terms of like what constitutes anti-competitive and what is competitive when you're thinking internationally rather than domestically. It's not bad corporate in my country. It's bad corporate from another country and tariffs. And it's a different calculation when you think about it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I will say one thing that I think about when I saw these cases is just the chilling effect on acquisitions generally, because I do think there's clear impact in terms of this is me putting a little bit of my like, you know, VC hat on, like you want to exit businesses and you can exit businesses by them having IPO or they can get acquired. and with the DOJ and the FTC being, you know, ascended in terms of their regulatory pressure, I think big acquisitions are off the table in a way more so than it has been the case historically. And that's going to have interesting reverberations through the fintech venture market. Like, do we, you kind of have to, there, if you want to have a really big outcome, you probably, it's going to be a lot harder to do a $5 billion acquisition, whether it's Visa, whether it's Fiserv, FIS, any of the big banks. I think you have to go the IPO route. In one way, that's exciting. Probably it's more exciting when companies stay independent. You got to see what they build. But that means there's less cash flowing back to the system in earlier innings.
Well, and the market's really repriced, hasn't it? I mean, it's when Plaid was priced at the $5 billion acquisition offer, they then went on to raise at like 13.4 in the height of fintech mania in 2021. And now, what is it, secondary markets are saying something like 3.8, according to the recent Forbes piece. So, you know, like that being off the table means, you know, you got to imagine their revenue's grown in that time. So, yeah, it's a completely different thing. But Visa did just acquire a company called Featurespace, which is like a very UK, European-centric fraud and compliance platform, well, mostly on the fraud side. And they did some of the early AI movements. And
How big was that acquisition?
It was like 970, I think. So it wasn't huge. But it's as much as anything, you see Visa trying to acquire its way into Europe and MasterCard trying to acquire its way into the US. So they are still happening. MasterCard also earlier in September acquired a cybersecurity company for about $2.6 billion. I can't remember their name, but what they do is they do like breach examination. They send in a team of analysts to go look at like what happened in this breach. Are you, big bank, affected? What was in the emails that were stolen? All of that kind of stuff. And you can see that with the AI fraud cybersecurity thing, there's you can probably be safe there.
Yeah.
Acquiring like a pay by bank thing, like if they went to go acquire Trustly right now, I think they'd struggle.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's where, you know, I think you probably do in the US maybe 100, 200, 300, $500 million acquisitions, even if you're a payment network. But you start getting over that $1 billion headline valuation, I think it's just going to attract a ton of regulatory attention.
What about the private companies? Like, what if Stripe went and bought something big, you know, on the open finance side? Because they're not in a dominant position by any stretch of the imagination. They're cash flow accretive. Do you think they're sort of out of the woods a little bit? They're a little bit further away from it. It's only the networks here that are seen as dominant.
I do think that's going to be an interesting question around, because now some of these private companies are much larger and could conceivably do multi-billion-dollar acquisitions, but they still, if you look at their shares of, you know, market share, it's not like a Visa. So I think they could pull it off. So that's probably the one kind of silver lining on the potential exit for M&A is some of these large private companies definitely don't have significant market share, but could pull off a multi-billion dollar acquisition. And so that'll be interesting to see if there's appetite to do something like that.
I'm interested in Visa's flexible credential and can they actually deliver on that? I don't know if you saw this, but this is their idea that what was taking the 16-digit card number and turning it into something that will sit on your mobile phone, like the cards in Apple Pay and everything else, that now works for any payment rail potentially, and it works for your identity documents, but done through Visa. So it's kind of this pull away from the OEMs like Apple and some of the Googles of the world trying to pull it all into the device and all into the wallet versus it sitting at the bank and in the network. So there's this interesting tug of war going on where identity meets payments and whether or not the card networks have a right to win. Because to me, it seems like both sides have gone, like payments is a battleground, but what we're really after is identity is the thing that gets you to payments. And I don't think that's part of the DOJ's calculation in this conversation at all. And meanwhile, they're going after Apple about NFC and they're going after Google about something else. So there's just antitrust everywhere you look.
Yeah. And yeah, it's hard to decide, you know, how coherent of a strategy it is to attack along all of these different vectors. It's going to be interesting. For sure. We'll end on that cliffhanger for the second episode of Rex and Simon Talk FinTech. If there's something we didn't cover you'd like us to touch on, drop a comment down below. Maybe we'll cover that next week. Catch you next time.